IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to another episode of All Things Policy. This is going to be a tech-focused episode, and generally it's Pratik, I, and one other person. And I always end up feeling like having three people ends up diluting the conversation a little bit because we are not able to go as deep as we like. That's the sense I get from some episodes that we've done. And to sort of fix that, today it's just Pratik and I. And we are going to go full wonky on information disorder and how states have been dealing with it. So let's begin. And I actually want to start with a development that comes to us from Kerala. Kerala has introduced a new law that says whoever makes, expresses, publishes, or disseminates through any kind of mode of communication, any matter or subject, for threatening, abusing, humiliating, or defaming a person or class of persons, knowing it is to be false, and that causes injury to the mind, reputation, or property of such person or class of persons, or any other person in whom they have interest, shall on condition be punished with imprisonment of a term which may extend to 3 years, or with fine which may extend to 10,000 rupees, or with both. It's quite a, interesting development is how I would frame it. But let's hear from the other guest that we have on today. Pratik, what do you think of this?
Yeah, so it's really interesting. So this stage, it's an ordinance that was signed by the governor over the weekend, and it's an amendment to the Kerala Police Act, right? And it was in response to cases of social media abuse that a number of people have faced. So it came in response to that, but you know, as the clause you've read out indicates that it is a little, there is certainly an element of overreach with it. The comparisons have been made to Section 66A of the IT Act that was struck down by the Supreme Court. So this was expectedly criticized heavily. And after that, what happened was that on Monday, 23rd November, the Chief Minister basically said that we will look into this further. We're not passing this right now. But interestingly, it was challenged in court, in the Kerala High Court. And technically, the ordinance is still in force, right? Because there's been no official withdrawal. The governor has signed it. It is in effect. There was a hearing yesterday, which was 24th, where the additional advocate general of the state basically went on record to say that they will not prosecute anyone under these provisions. But I'm just stating that because I think it's important to point out the difference between the ordinance being withdrawn and this limbo state that it is in right now, where state authorities have basically said that we won't prosecute anyone, but technically it is in force. Now, coming to, it's not news to anyone who listens to All Things Policy that I'm pretty obsessed with the information ecosystem. And if you've been tracking Kerala over the last few months, this is not necessarily surprising, right? What's been happening in the past few months is that the state government has been trying to tackle information disorder. They put into effect various fact-checking initiatives. Now, when that was going on, the opposition actually resorted to, actually made very Trumpian accusations that, you know, anything that the state government doesn't like is dismissed as fake news. And there was pushback against any effort that the state was making to expand their fact-checking initiatives beyond COVID-19, right? And you know, a very similar situation 2 months ago, where the chief minister was basically coming out and assuring everyone that the laws will not affect freedom. In that case, it was in the context of media freedom. But you know, it's sort of been building up to this in some sense, right? So it's not surprising that, in the sense that as they continue to look for ways to tackle information disorder, you've ultimately gone to more and more stringent methods, right? And it was also reported sometime in October where, you know, I think the cyber police has already filed around 200 cases for, you know, in quotes, fake news, which were under various various laws, right? The Information Technology Act, the Police Act, and the Pandemic Act, right? So it's irrespective of this law, some of this has already been happening as a response to information disorder.
Okay, thanks for that. I read this clause and there are two things that actually, that reach out to me in this poignant manner. And the first one is, it talks about whoever makes, expresses, publishes, or disseminates through any kind of mode of communication. So this mode of communication could be just us talking. It could be us on a podcast. It could be us talking in real life, in a non-pandemic world, or on Twitter, right? So it's basically this vast, basically speech that's happening anywhere, it comes under this. And then the other two sort of qualifiers for you to be either go to jail or pay 10,000 or both of those things is that you have to know that what you said is false. So I imagine this is called disinformation, right, Pratik?
Yes, right. Yeah. It falls in the disinformation category in the sense that the intention is to do harm of some sort.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't know what the other criticisms of this thing are because I haven't done the research and I am yet to read this edition of a newsletter. But generally, how would you clarify in a court case if person X at the time of tweeting or saying things knew them to be false? It seems like a he said, she said thing unless there's like evidence where you can actually trap them, which I imagine would not be a lot. And the other thing is that you have to know it to be false and it has to cause injury to the mind, reputation or property of such person or class of persons. So that's the third thing because, injury to the mind, I guess you could get a therapist to prove that. Reputation is something that's, in some very high profile cases that might be extremely clear, but to me, it's a pretty broad mandate. I mean, reputation in itself is a very broad term to harm. Most things could harm people's reputation or like at least change it. And similarly for property, I mean, I don't know, I guess intellectual property should also be included in this, but like it's a very broad mandate. So those are my initial thoughts and criticisms on this. And I don't know if they're legit because I haven't seen cases coming out of this or I haven't read them. So I haven't done my research on that front. But what are some of the other criticisms that you've seen, Pratik? And how do you think they've developed?
No, so I think one of it is, I think the points you made are fair. But again, a lot of that is going to be subject of litigation, right? That's the whole point. The law is in place and you'll have to prove these accusations over a court case, right? But the single largest criticism of this has been that, it is ultimately, it's very vaguely worded, right? And it can be then used to suppress any form of dissent, right? Because the terms that are used, like you said, are very broad, right? And it's essentially in the hands of, then it depends on the, and look, it's the Police Act, right? So it's going to be used when the police prosecute people. So then it's a function of how they choose to apply the law. And given how broad it is, you can see it being at least enforced, used to file cases in a lot of scenarios. Now, you'll still have to go through the entire judicial process to actually convict someone. But that's generally where most of the criticism seems to be. Of course, the other aspect also have been that some of the challenges in court have been on the grounds that it's basically resurrecting 66A, which had already been struck down.
All right, thanks. I want to now switch to a little more academic front, if that's okay. Your newsletter this time talks about this book called The Disinformation Age, if I'm not wrong. And they actually have a set of interesting frameworks. I forget the name of the person and you can bring that in. But what exactly are these arguments that, to me, it sounds like all these academic frameworks of books that you've read and a couple of which that I have read, they keep looking for the lowest common denominator. They keep saying that, like they keep trying to find a common ground between all of these cases and trying to thread the needle in a way that says that if this speech has happened and if this harm has been triggered, then this set of actions should happen so that this doesn't happen again. And on the surface, to me, that makes sense. But the fact that the real world is actually a lot more complex and this is it's infinitely more complicated than just these set of actions happening and platform resolving this. To me, it seems like a fool's errand in some sense. So could you elaborate on this book that you mentioned in your newsletter and then what the framework is?
Yes. So just before I get into that, right, I also think it's important to point out that while we're focusing specifically on Kerala right now, this is not limited to one part of the country. It's not limited to one side of the political spectrum. Neither are these kind of measures limited to one particular country as well, right? In India itself, we've seen since, of course, a lot of this has been accelerated with COVID-19. And since then, we've seen measures where district managers in various districts in Haryana have tried to ban social media. In Mumbai, there was a notification sent out by the essentially the public relations wing of the police, or the police, which basically said that if you distort facts, you are liable for prosecution if you're spreading fake news, right? Again, in quotes, because I'm not a fan of that term. Then there have also been instances where in Udupi, in Karnataka, the district commissioner was basically saying that if anyone is found spreading misinformation or disinformation, they will be prosecuted under the Epidemic Act. In the last few months, you've also had a PIL in the Supreme Court seeking Aadhaar linking to all social media accounts because people are creating fake accounts and then using that to create, to spread false information and communal disharmony. That was the statement in the PIL. And there have been reports that were submitted to the Home Minister, which basically recommended things like real-time social media monitoring in order to address misinformation. Right? So there's been a whole slew of different types of measures. A lot of it is a bit of throw everything at the wall and see what sticks. But again, this is not limited to India. And again, I find it odd to plug my own newsletter, but in one of the previous editions, I had also done a little bit of analysis about 30 countries around the world and how they are trying to addressing information disorder. And most of them seem to settle on mandatory measures with punitive measures and mainly addressing the supply side of the problem. The reason I'm saying this is because I want to create a little bit of context around what type of measures we're seeing enforced today. Right? Now coming to the book you mentioned, which is called The Disinformation Age. It's an open access book published by the Cambridge University Press. And there were two chapters in it specifically focusing on policy solutions to disinformation. Right? One of them was by Heidi Twarek, who's an associate professor of international history and public policy at University of British Columbia. And what she does is that she tried to identify historical lessons from the German interwar period. Right? And some of these are pretty interesting. I'll get to that. But before that, she also makes this point that in dealing with the information ecosystem today, we can sometimes fall into the novelty hype or the novelty trap, which is that you're considering these today's circumstances to be very different from the past when in reality they're not, right? And she said in the process you end up missing certain things like the part dependence of the internet, right? And that how internet technologies today have been influenced in a way by a lot of the developments and business realities of the technologies that came before it, right? So that's not something that that we should ignore. And the fact that we tend to misdiagnose, the issues we're seeing today as content problems rather than situating them in the broader societal context, right? And the other point that she makes is that we're focusing on day to day rather than underlying structures or business models, and there's a tendency to think short term because of this, right? Now the lesson that she draws in terms of what the regulation should be like, and I found those little interesting, is that so the principle that she lays out are that to public policy wonks, a lot of this is public policy first principles, right? But it's still interesting to look at this and then contrast it with what we're seeing in the real world. right? Is that this, you know, any sort of legislation that you have to address disinformation, it should be forward thinking and adaptable, right? It should be responsive to changes in the information ecosystem. I think these two points are fairly obvious, right? But the one that those were interesting to me was that as you seek to protect democratic ideals, you need to democracy proof them. She specifically gave the example in Germany how state control over the media increased, and over time that was then used to curb dissent. And you can sort of see parallels with that around the world today, right? If we say that, you know, the state is the authoritative source of information and it needs to control all the information, then you can see that being used for propaganda as well. Right. Now, the other aspect that also comes into this is that let's assume, right, as society, we have to make the judgment of, look, do we want to regulate this or not? Because we've discussed this a couple of times, right? 4 or 5 years ago, if you ask someone, hey, should we be trying to regulate disinformation online? A lot of people may have said no. Right? You ask people today, a lot of people say yes. 4 or 5 years from now, we don't know what the information ecosystem is going to be like, right? So this is not a question that I guess Pratik or Rohan can answer on a podcast. This is a broader question for society, right? But let's assume that we do, right? Let's assume that we agree that yes, this should be regulated. I think it's important for us to keep in mind that when you're regulating disinformation, we're also creating structures that can regulate all of information. Right. I think it's important to keep that principle in mind as we're thinking through any sort of legislation. The next question that we need to think of is, do we need new laws? Right. Now, again, I don't have formal legal training, so I can't really comment on, even this Kerala example whether we have existing laws that can solve this, that can address these harms as well. It seems like we do. But you also have to situate that in the context of there is a tendency, right, among politicians to engage in political theater where you enact a law just to show that you're doing something when, you know, in reality, the solution is better enforcement of existing laws and improving capacity of existing state instruments. Right. So these are two broad questions that we do need to ask before we start getting into the actual question of regulation.
Okay, well, on that point on whether or not we do need new laws to regulate this, I think it's interesting because, to answer that question, you would need to look at how today's laws are doing, whether or not what they're doing is sufficient. And today's laws actually don't have a clear-cut approach to information disorder. And so, like, for example, this whole Kerala law that was introduced, like, it's just such a all-encompassing approach. It makes you want to actually reconsider what you're saying and why you're saying it. And so there's always this fine line that's being walked. And we talk about this a lot, actually, if you've been listening to our podcast. But the broader question I have is that generally we tend to end with the takeaway that there are no easy answers. Recently, the question I've been asking myself, actually, is that whether there are any answers to this. I have been unable to get my head around how to regulate this thing or how content moderation should be handled going forward. Do you think there are any answers to this, Pratik? And if not, or if yes, why so? So sorry about that complex question.
I think I get that. And, I think it's important for us to realize that, look, just regulating information disorder, disinformation is not going to solve the problem completely, right? Because at the end of the day, what happened in these cases is that you're typically exploiting existing divisions, right? In whatever form, or existing inequalities, right? And those ultimately need to be addressed, right? Anything else is just band-aid. Then it's a question of how long that band-aid sticks. That said, it's not necessary that this is something that can't be regulated. I'm with you in the sense that there isn't one set of rules or one set of, just one easy framework that we can refer to do this, right? But again, I'm going to go back to that, to another chapter in the same book, this one by Benjamin Epstein, and he sort of lays down four principles for this regulation. And again, you know, to public policy wonks, this is going to seem like public policy first principles, right? But you're essentially saying that you know, any sort of disinformation regulation should target the negative effects of it while minimizing additional harm caused by the regulation itself. Right, and I think that's important, because it's very easy for us to, you know, to borrow the cliched line, you know, throw out the baby with the bathwater when you're trying to address these situations. Right. The other thing that he recommends is that the regulation needs to be proportional to the size of the harm and the economic realities of the company. Right. And I think, Rohan, this is the point that you will agree with, right? In terms of, and he specifically gives the examples of the kind of fines that have been imposed against the likes of Google and Facebook by various commissions in Europe, right? Which have been pretty insignificant compared to even their, you know, single quarter earnings, right? So if you are trying to set, you know, enforce regulation, or you're trying to create incentives for companies to act, then the regulation needs to be proportional, right? And one other principle that he recommends is that the effect, you know, a regulation should be determined by independent agencies and should be informed by ongoing research in the field, right? And again, the reason I've laid these three out because, you know, it's important to contrast this with what we've been seeing in the last, especially 6 months, but it goes back larger than that. At this point, it seems like the measure that we're coming up with is exactly how not to regulate information disorder, right? And I think it's important to address that as well, because if that's not addressed, you know, you're on a path where it's difficult to walk back from.
All right, thanks. I guess this podcast has left me with more anxiety and more questions than with more hopes and answers. So another great episode of All Things Policy. All right, thank you so much, and hope to see you next week. Bye-bye.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst or our website takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week. Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.